Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Break free from the forces holding you back. Get the life you deserve. Eliminate stress, reduce anxiety, decrease depression, and start living your full potential. Thousands have used Dr. Fujian Zane's Awareness Integration Theory, an evidence-based behavioral health breakthrough with incredible life-changing results. Getting rid of past trauma, having fulfilling relationships, increasing earnings, and living their best life. Now, the Fujian app is available to everyone. The app is Dr. Fujian Zane's Awareness Integration Theory in the palm of your hand. Download the Fujian app today.
Do you wish to wake up one day and hit the life reset button? Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane, helps you navigate crucial life areas, heal the past traumas, and cultivate fulfilling relationships and careers. Life Reset is your guide to a profound journey to reshape your life. Grab your copy on Amazon or Audible now and embark on a path to a more joyous and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Fujian Zane, a psychotherapist and author and the creator of the Awareness Integration Theory. I'm so thrilled to have you join us today for what I promise you to be an insightful discussion. In this episode, I chat with Dr. Deborah Mandow. She's a nationally renowned, no-nonsense, yet upbeat and compassionate psychologist who has over 30 years of experience focusing on helping individuals, couples, and families improve their lives, understanding that one size does not fit for all. Dr. Deborah integrates multiple therapeutic modalities with expertise ranging from general life concerns to addiction, eating disorders, depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder. When it comes to the mother and daughter duo, there's no problem she can't address. Dr. Deborah is the author of 4 books, including Dump That Jump, which is from HarperCollins, 2007. She's been featured on multiple national television and radio shows as a relationship expert and has co-hosted her own podcast, achieving over a million listeners. So whether she's in print, she's on air, or in her office, Dr. Deborah delivers her message that it's never too late to overcome adversity and learn to thrive. You can definitely visit her at drdeborahonline.com. Today, we actually talk about her latest book, Sassy and Rude. And she talks about, in this book, the dynamic of daughters and mothers. We kind of look over many, many angles of this relationship together. And she really shares beautiful words of wisdom and not only how the dynamic is, but how it can be and how we could go from a certain type of a power struggle as we're growing up between the mothers and daughters to a healing concept. So I enjoyed our conversation. I'm positive you're going to enjoy the same. Be sure to subscribe to my podcast, my YouTube channel, and connect with me through my website, FujianZane.com, or any of my social media platforms that you can actually also get from FujianZane.com. Share your thoughts with me. I'd love to hear from you. So without further ado, here's Dr. Deborah Mandow.
Intentional Parenting, a practical guide to awareness integration theory, written by Dr. Jafari, Dr. Fujian Zane, and Dr. Manoukian, 3 experts in human development, is your step-by-step guide to raising a healthy child prepared for a culturally integrated world. We're supported in parenting infants to adolescents using the latest evidence-based scientific research on parenting. Order your copy on Amazon now.
Eliminate stress, reduce anxiety, and decrease depression. Dr. Fujian Zane's Awareness Integration Theory has helped thousands like you get incredible life-changing results. The Fujian app gives you her evidence-based treatment in the palm of your hand. Download today.
It is so nice to have you, Dr. Deborah Mandow.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here to share my story with you.
Yes, and you wrote the book Sassy and Rude. Awesome name.
Thank you. Can I tell you that the original title was called Why Is She Such a Bitch?
I love that too, but this one is really, really cool. You write about mothers and daughters. So, you know, you've been a psychotherapist for such a long time. I've been a psychotherapist also for, God knows, 32 years. So, and I also relate to me and my mother. So there, it's like it's home, you know, like we're going to be talking about things that are just like home, like it really resonates. And I hope that it the same way it resonates with whomever's watching us and listening to us, right? So first of all, why did you choose this topic?
Of course, it's a great question, and I think most of us, even as therapists, we have some personal agenda when we write our stories, because it's not just about all the clinical work that I've done with mothers and daughters, but there's a personal background here too. So I'll just drop into that a little bit. My own mom and I did not have the best relationship, sadly, and she died quite young at around 58 years old. Both my parents were immigrants. My father was from Poland, a Holocaust survivor. My mother was from Estonia, and she had to, her family moved to Sweden when she was a young girl, and then to Canada. And so she pretty much raised herself. Her dad was very abusive. I only met my grandparents once, and she was not really equipped to be a mom, I should say. I don't even know that she really wanted to be a mom. My parents were about almost 14 years apart. She was very young. She gave up a career in modeling. And I'm not saying that she didn't love me, but she just didn't have that really nurturing kind of love that I really wanted to provide for my own daughter. And so she was kind of a tough cookie. If you left a glass on the table for 2 seconds, if you went to the bathroom and came back, it was gone and she was mad. Why did you leave the glass on the table? Well, because I was still drinking my water. It was that kind of, you know, if you didn't get A pluses, if you brought home straight A's, why were they not A pluses? Now, I know in hindsight that she really just wanted me to have a better life than she had. She wanted me to be successful, but she was not the nurturing type that I really desired, you know? So it was a hard time to really feel that loving, oozing component. So when I had my daughter, I was just doing that. I'm going to give her all the love, shower her with every nurturing component of life that I could give to her. And sometimes we figure out that we've kind of done a pendulum swing and we've done a little bit too much the other way, and we can yield somebody who is a bit on the sassy and rude side. So that was the original kind of inspiration for the book. And then over time, I mean, I worked with lots and lots of mother-daughter duos with a lot of high conflict and trying to help them get to a different place where they could really have a nourishing relationship with one another. I know that was a little long-winded, but it was necessary to tell the background.
Absolutely. And, you know, it brought me to an experience that I have consistently also with parents and daughters that I see, adult ones, which, you know, they come one person, like the daughter goes to therapy. And then as they go to therapy and they look at all the stuff and, you know, like, ah, it comes from my upbringing and this is what's going on with me. And that's why today I'm here. And they become very angry at their mother. And now they also go to a therapist and say, see, I have every right to be angry at you. Just look at how I've turned out. And sometimes this anger kind of brews and stays and really destroys a relationship between mother and daughter. And I think it's so important to be able to see how you could create some healing, and that's what your book does. I love what you said in your book in the intro, which is we went through hardship. We wanted to do this open, loving concept of whatever you say. However, on the, you know, there's this duality, and I think it's not just about the mothers who are doing, but the parenting styles have changed. What, you know, the kids can get from the internet has changed. So the amount of information that they have and the way that they think it's okay to also deal with their parents has changed. So society has changed in the way that it allows the kids to, you know, deal with their parents. So many of these factors are there. And then therefore, it creates such an, you know, shift between a mother and a daughter. So I really love for you to share. Why do you even think this happens between mother and daughter and not, you know, the sibling? Or why was it a choice that it was written just for the one parent and the one child versus doesn't the same dynamic happen, for example, with mothers and sons or fathers and daughters? That sure, was like three questions in one. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. I love it. So let's talk about the developmental process a bit, which you're very familiar with, and that separation individuation process that occurs. And yes, you're correct. I could have written this book for mothers and sons, for mothers and any of their children, or fathers and sons. The truth is, I got to be honest, is it's women who buy self-help books by and large. And there are more, and more conflict tends to occur between mothers and daughters because of that separation individuation process. There seems to be something about same gender that makes it a little bit more difficult to have that separate sense of identity, because by nature we're very similar. That's not to say that people who, you know, have different types of identity things that they're going through and all that stuff, but just the typical mother-daughter situation is we're both females and we are alike in that way. But then it's a little harder to make that distinction of me being a separate individual. So mothers and daughters, fathers and sons, mothers and sons, and fathers and daughters all go through that process. However, I just really wanted to hone in on this particular dynamic duo, just because it's very relevant to me, because I only have one child and it's a girl, and she's a girl. And I just wanted to really express that. And I had more, I would say, in my practice over my own 35, 40 years, is I've seen many more mothers and daughters come to therapy than I have seen fathers and sons, or even mothers and sons. And there is a lot of change that's happened in our culture in terms of how we raise our children. And there's a bit more, I would say, entitlement that goes along with the youth these days. I mean, we talk about the millennials, they think they deserve everything, and sometimes without working for it. Very different than, I'm going to imagine you and I are a similar age group, that we had to work for things. You wanted something, you know, you wanted a car, you went and worked for it. Now, of course, many people got their cars given to them, or you got a used car, but you had to pay for the gas, or you had to do this. And we tend to overindulge our children these days, and particularly with mothers and daughters, because many, many moms really want to have that almost a friendship relationship with their daughter, because it's like, oh, I get to have what I didn't have with my mom, and it's so special. But daughters reach a certain age where they want to be their own person, and they want that sense of separateness, and they want that individuality, and they want to know that they are distinct human beings.
Yes.
That answer, I don't know, I kind of blended those questions together.
Yes. Well, one of the interesting factor is that we do gain a lot from our parents, especially the same gender. And it's, and we do have the concept of, you know, butting heads with each other. Many of the daughters we have heard that says, I'm never going to be like my mother. And then they become a parent and they're like, oh my God, what I just said was exactly like my parent, you know, and my mother. But the beauty of what you're sharing in your book, Sassy and Root, I love those names. I'm going to keep saying Sassy and Root. It's about how much we also need to be able to be aware, because if you're not aware of what's going on with you, and you're kind of like automatically, you took some things from your mother, you defied some things, you know, through your head with your mother, I'm never going to do this. But when you become a parent, every age that your child is growing, you automatically are also bringing up some of the trauma, some of the issues that you've had from your own childhood and your own wounds into the, you know, into the relationship. Sometimes it duplicates, sometimes it compensates, sometimes it goes all the way to the other side. And part of the beauty of your book is to really, really look at who you are yourself, and then as the role of the parent, and how if your wounds are not finished, if you're not healed, if they're not taken care of, they're going to have some impact in that relationship. So can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm going to actually just say the whole title of the book, because it does speak to that very point that you're making. Sassy and Root, Her New Attitude. It's really a tough love guide for moms on how to bring back some of the sugar and spice in their not so nice adult daughters. And it does not mean that the daughters themselves are the sassy and rude ones. The moms may be perceived as sassy and rude as well. It goes both ways. But what you're talking about is very crucial to the to the essence of this book, is that we do need as moms to heal our own historical wounds, because otherwise what we tend to do is recreate in some fashion that which is left unhealed from our own childhood. So let's say in my own situation, you know, I really wanted someone who was very nurturing and who was very kind of like that oozing, huggy, kissing, you know, adoring type of mom, because I was a super sensitive little girl. And I mean, I noticed everything, I watched for everything, I was very vigilant, and I had a lot of trauma in my youth as well from various sources that I don't need to go into. But that was a big healing journey for me. But as a mom, I just thought, oh, I'm going to get it right this time. You know, I'm going to give her everything. And I think I smothered her at times. And I think at times also I didn't set appropriate limits and boundaries, because I would set them, but then I wouldn't necessarily follow through with them. So the essence of this book is really about healing our own wounds, not bringing those into the relationship with our daughter, encouraging a new dialogue, a new format to have a better relationship. It's primarily for adult daughters and their moms, because there are lots of books already written for teenagers and that whole dynamic. But you know what? This process carries on throughout the lifespan. Once you're a mother, you are a mother. And if you're always a daughter to a mother, whether the mother's alive or not, we internalize components of our parents all the way through our lifespan. So it's really critical that we get out of the blame shame game. This is not about harboring resentments about our own historical past, our own parents and what they did or didn't do for us, but letting go of those wounds, learning how to heal those, gaining forgiveness for ourselves, forgiveness for others, and then creating a dialogue with our daughters that we can say, hey, let's heal this. Let's figure this out. Whatever you're holding on to against me, let me know what it is. I want to hear it. So we have to be in a good place though, to be able to do that. So the first part of the book is really about healing our own stuff before we even open up that window to addressing that which we may be suffering with our own daughters.
Sassy and Ruth, her new attitude, from Dr. Deborah Mendel. Dr. Deborah, I know for myself, I have, she's passed away, but my relationship was, like, she was very loving, but not necessarily attentive. And the only time she would be attentive, it would be when she wanted to tell me that I'm not doing something good enough and I have to excel and I got to do 10 more things and 10 more things. And it was interesting because all I heard was, I'm not enough and I got to do 10 more things. But the world used to hear that, oh my gosh, she's like the best daughter. So this, I wouldn't hear it because the message was never there. Sure. And the affection was always in front of others. In front of others, it was always a lot of affection to me. Wow. But alone, it was more like, come on, come on, do the next thing, do this. Now piano, now ballet, now, you know, learn French, now learn English, now then do the. It was always like I had to be doing something. I remember I had gone to the bathroom and then she knocked and I'm like, yes, the bathroom. Uh-huh. I just want you to read this book. I'm like, well, I'm in a bathroom. Yeah, but the ups, you know, your upper part is not doing something. Might as well read a book while you're sitting there. And I'm like, really? I don't even get to have one moment in the bathroom. But what was funny is like the part of her that pushed to me is moving ahead exactly as she wanted me to be. However, the other parts are still also there. I'm never enough until I do 10 more things. Sure. And in my relationship, and I came here when I was 12, so I didn't even have her after that. But there was this, I wanted to share this because there's always this concept of the needing for that attachment and then pushing away and then needing it and then pushing it away. And part of the individuation you were talking about. But it's also the sadness that, like, I, based on the love that I want her, my mother, to be the way I want her to be in every single situation, supporting me. And it's almost like I want to be treated like an adult, but I want that little girl to always have her mommy too. And it's such a such a dynamic that it's a struggle. And when I talk to a lot of adult daughters, it's almost the same thing. Like, although something like my mother had is like, I could never be enough. Sometimes I experience from daughters that their mothers can never be enough or do enough or be the right one. So that dynamic is always there somehow also. What do you think?
100%. And I'm sorry that you experienced that, because it is hard to feel like not enough. And just to comment a little bit, one of the things as children that we really, well, really any of us, we don't know how to read somebody's intentions. People can tell us what their intentions are, but we really just interpret people's intentions, right? We observe something, we interpret it, we take it inside, then we have our feelings about it. And you never know how we're going to interpret something, right? We don't know what that internal computer is going to do with that information. So I'm going to guess that your mother's intention was to get you to be a high achiever so you would succeed in the world, and that you would be not for wanting anything, right? But her methodology, the way in which she may have conveyed that as a little girl, as a young adult, all you hear is, I'm not enough, I'm not enough, I'm not enough. And then that affects your own level of self-worth, which then can affect how you treat your own self. And it could actually backfire on her, because some people who don't feel like enough, they just give up. Thankfully, you did not. And you drove yourself to be a hugely successful woman on this planet, doing great things, sharing your message with other people. It's phenomenal and awesome. But it could have gone the other way. So it's really important to understand that we really have to understand the intentions of the person with whom we are trying to have a new dynamic. And that goes both ways. So what you're talking about is, yes, I think a lot of adult daughters grow up and they really just hold their mothers to a standard that's unreasonable. And part of the book is about understanding what our expectations are. And as they say in 12-step programs, expectations are resentments under construction. And resentments are like swallowing poison and waiting for the other guy to die. So I talk at length about reasonable expectations, right? We can have expectations that are conscious. And if they're conscious, then we know what they are. But do we have agreement from the person with whom we have set up this expectation? So in other words, if you and I are going to dinner on Sunday night, and we both agreed to 5 o'clock, and we've had that conversation, and I show up at the restaurant, and you don't show up at 5 o'clock, I have every right to be disappointed, because we had an agreement and you did not tell me otherwise that you were not going to be showing up. But what if we said, hey, you know what, we'll talk about maybe having dinner this Sunday, and maybe 5 o'clock will work. I'll let you know. If I don't hear from you, but I show up at the restaurant and you don't show up, that's on me, because you never confirmed. So you take that into a mother-daughter dynamic. You have a mom who you're expecting as a daughter to be perfect, to always understand your feelings, to know everything what you're thinking, to be a mind reader, because my gosh, she raised you, she should know everything about you. It's not so, because guess what? You as the daughter are ever changing. You're different today than you were 5 years ago or 5 minutes ago. Our feelings are fluid. Our emotions are fluid. Our thoughts are fluid. So we cannot be held accountable to something. You know, there's some things I would say that are pretty characteristic of people. There are certain likes that we have. There are certain dislikes we have. And it would take a long time for those things to change, or some monumental aha moment for something to change. But by and large, we can have certain understandings about somebody. But holding someone accountable to expectations that have not been articulated, have not been verbalized, it's not fair. And it goes badly most of the time. So I have a whole section on that, about how to understand what your expectations are, how to make them conscious, to make sure that you have agreement, so that you really have an audience when you're having those expectations.
Some of the expectations that you're also talking about hold kind of a resistance when, even in therapy sessions, we've had mothers who are acknowledging, you know, I know that I did this and that's all I knew. And, mm-hmm. you know, my intention was this, like, you know, like if my mother would come in and say, yes, my intention was, you know, I didn't have as a woman all that I could have. And when I had you, I wanted to give you all the opportunities that I didn't have. And I wanted you to be able to like do all of it and get all the opportunities. And because I was a single mother, I was working, and she could say all of these things to me. And I've watched mothers explain, like, these are the reasons I've done this. Some of it because of the good intention for you, and some of it just my own circumstances. This is all that I could do, or this is all that I knew. And they're trying very hard to apologize and reconnect and do all of that. And I've watched the daughters that would say, I hear you, but it doesn't take away that wounding. So I don't know what to do now. And they just sit there and it's like, I hear you. There's nothing else you could do, but I'm still upset. I'm still pissed. I have a hole in my heart. And I've watched this dynamic consistently also happen in the sessions where it's like allowing that healing to happen and the expectation of, yes, you didn't. And then, you know, how can you return and also accept your mother as who she is today versus, you know, the mommy that I expected to have and I just didn't get. And I'm going to hold my, you know, breath until I turn blue until I get that mommy that I said I should have. And there's also this kind of like disappointment and how to get grief for the mommy we didn't have and, you know, kind of like enjoy the one we have. And that is a whole different process also. Can you share a little bit about that and your practice and how you've shared that also in your book?
Absolutely. I think so. My premise in the book is, and it's a little biased, is that I think we like to think of the moms as being the primary healer first. Right? The one who extends the olive branch, the one who says, I really want to hear how I wounded you. I really want to hear the ways in which you didn't feel good about the things that I did. And you listen, and I tried to teach moms how to listen with a really open heart, because once you've done the healing of your own wounds and you have self-compassion and you have the ability to hold space for yourself and forgiveness, then it's much easier to hear that which somebody is speaking about that feels hard to hear, right? So if I'm in a good place and I know that my daughter's hurting about something and I offer to her, listen, I really want to hear what that experience was like for you. And then I'm listening and I'm reflecting back. I'm not explaining. I'm not excusing. I'm not doing anything other than just a sort of a open field of, I just want to hear it. And then each and every time she's telling me something about that, I say, wow, if that's how you perceive, that is how you perceive me at that moment. And therefore I totally get that you would feel sad about that, or you'd feel angry, or you'd feel scared. I get that. You know, one of the things that I have, that I had some very wonderful volunteers give to me was a list of questions that I provided to young women who are daughters to what they would love to ask their moms and the answers that they gave. So for instance, you know, what is your favorite thing about your mom? What are the things she did that really wounded you? What are the things that you would want to never change about your mom? The three things you saw, there's a list of questions and answers. And it was really eye-opening to hear the love that poured out of these young women's hearts, that they really wanted healing. They didn't want to hate their moms. They didn't want to be mean to them. They didn't want to be distant. They really loved them and wanted to have a close relationship, but they kept feeling like they would hit a brick wall, because the second they would share something, the mom would get defensive. So the idea is to let down that guard, and you're just being almost like a sponge to hear this, but without shame, without blame, without guilt, because if you know in your heart of hearts that you did the best you could, and that's who this book is for. It's not for the narcissistic mom who could care less about her daughter and only about herself, or somebody who suffers severe mental illness. It's for that mom who was too nice, the too nice mom who overextended herself. And it's feeling, she feels guilty about everything. So gosh, no, she doesn't want to hear that she did something wrong. But the idea is, it's your daughter's perspective. It's your daughter's perception. It's not an absolute truth. You may have done the best you could. I remember my daughter saying she wished that I would have been that mom, that stay-at-home mom who would have been baking cookies when she came home. And I wish I could have been that to some degree as well. But the truth is I like being a career woman, and I was a single mom, and I had to make a living, and I had a wonderful nurturing caregiver for her. And then she was in school. And by the way, there were many a times that I was at home baking cookies with her, or having cookies waiting for her when she got home. She just didn't remember that. What she remembered was the glass was half empty, not the glass was half full, because she honed in on the making cookies, not necessarily though about all the other ways in which there was a lot of nurturing. So the idea again, in what you're saying, is how do you have that conversation? How do you help the daughter be willing to open her heart to have a new experience with her mom. So I'd say the mom, try very as best you can to put the defenses at the door. You don't need them because there's nothing really to defend against. It's just hearing the perception. It's a perception of your child. So you don't correct then, you just empathize. Then you can go to the next phase, which is say, hey, I'd like to share my own experience of that. I'd love to share an explanation, if you will, not an excuse, but an explanation or a context. Like, it helped me so much when I knew more about my mother's childhood, because before I knew any of that, it was a lot of times I just couldn't put her in a perspective other than it felt to me like she was mean to me a lot of times. And later on, I got to see that she was just a hurting little bird inside, because her caring showed up when animals showed up. I mean, I could bring my mom any bird with a broken wing, and we would go in the garage and we would do everything we could to try to save this little thing, or kittens or puppies or whatever it was. She had that heart. That's where she felt safe. So I could see that, but wasn't so much with people, because I think she was just a guarded, wounded little girl who did not know how to heal those wounds herself. So it's really helpful, especially for adult daughters, to get the context of your mom and her own childhood if you don't know anything about them. Find out. It will help you with your relationship. So two sides.
Yes. And also about how to be close as two adults, because it's such a different dynamic, right? Like, you know, when we're a daughter and as a mother, we have the authority. We are the disciplinary. We are the person who has to kind of be the role model and move forward and be the caretaker. But as our daughters grow up, the roles kind of change somehow, you know, in the midst of it. The need for closeness becomes a different way. It's not the same way of caretaking. It's a different way of being close. And I think a lot of times what you just alluded to, the children don't see the character of their parents or the needs of their parents. To children, parents are there to take care of them. And a lot of times when it's vice versa and there's a parent who's ill or is seeking the help, a lot of times it actually becomes, you know, a burden or a trauma for the child. So somehow the role is a kind of a one-way role that goes from a parent to their child. But as obviously we grow and we become an adult, there's a lot more of this equal sense of relatedness together. And can I also see my mother as a human being, as a female, as a woman, as mm-hmm. someone who's there, who also has needs? And yes, it's not that I'm just going to call upon them whenever I need them. And if they're coming to me because of their needs, then I push back and say, you're too enmeshed, you're just, you know, you're wanting too much, get away. And I've also seen that because of being too nice and, you know, kind of not even ever asking, I've asked the mothers and my sisters, even with your 10-year-old, can you sometimes just ask for a glass of water and, it's, you know, have them give you something and see that you also sometimes need something? Yes. Because we train them that you don't have to think of me as a human being. I'm just here to serve. And then as a grown-up, it's different. Like as a parent, we also want to have, I'm done. Like how many, you know, I'm not going to keep you as an infant for 40 years, 50 years. So yes. You also need to see me. And this dynamic of shifting from a parent to child to kind of like an equal adult. And then as, you know, as time goes on and mothers become a little bit elderly, and the shift that the daughters or a child has to actually become and take care of their mom. And you see this, like I see a lot of times in my practice, of this rage that happens, which is I'm going to lose my mother and now I have to take care of you until, you know, they do and shift this dynamic. Can you share a little bit about your experience with this dynamic?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's such a great question. And I'm sorry to say that I have so many answers that I'm not sure which ones to choose from.
Pour it out.
Okay. Well, it brings to mind many components that I think are important. One is that we can have a mother-daughter relationship where what you're talking about is that the mother was always in service of the child's needs, never really teaching that reciprocal experience. And often, I hate to say this, a lot of those daughters grow up without a lot of empathy. And they really do have this me, 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 me orientation. And they're really appalled at the idea that the mother is a person as well. Like, wait a second, you're my mother. You're my punching bag. You're there for me all the time. You do that. You do that. And what you're talking about, that rage is so, it can be so profound to switch that role. But there's also a component that's really important for moms to reflect on is, even if you were very indulgent of your daughter, were there times that you actually, what we call parentified your child? In other words, sometimes moms who have a lot of wounds, even though they're on the surface providing a lot, a never-ending supply of love, adoration, etc. On the other hand, they're also expecting their daughter to actually nourish them and to make up for them and to almost be their own mother, because that love that a child can give, that just uncontained love, that like a little toddler that runs up to you with the big arms and gives you a big squeeze hug and kisses you, is so yummy. It's hard to let go of that, right? So some moms, even though they did their best to be that indulging mom and ever present, actually were helping their daughters not really see that they could be the daughter. In other words, if that makes any sense, almost like a double bind. So it's important when you're addressing that dynamic with your daughter to really be open-minded to hearing, were there times at which you really did feel like it was inappropriate that you had to really nurture me? Maybe a mom, I mean, I talk about many different examples in the book, you know, somebody who's going through a divorce, and then, you know, the daughter gets mommy all to herself, which is wonderful for both of them. They go out shopping all the time. They do this together. They do that together. And then all of a sudden, you know, the daughter is dating in high school, and the mom is like, just what? And she's sabotaging it every place that she can because she can't handle it. She can't handle not having her little girl by her side. So it's really important that we understand both sides of that dynamic. But the critical component, I think, in parenting that has gotten somewhat lost, I think, in this last generation is teaching empathy. So I like the family-centric approach as opposed to a parent-centric or a child-centric, where it's really about what serves our family, whether it's a family of two, a family of three, a family of 10, or a family of 15, what's going to serve all of our needs? Now, clearly, the younger the child, the more their needs take priority. Right? You can't say, well, I want to go out to dinner tonight. And you know what, we don't have enough food for you at home. But so what? Go get it yourself. Well, I'm three, I can't do that. You know, I mean, I like actually distinctly remember my mother's claim to fame was telling people, the world, that I could make my own breakfast at a year. I was able to crawl to the cupboard and pour some cereal in a cup so I could get something to eat, because my mother didn't want to wake up till 10 o'clock. So that was not necessarily what I would say something to be proud of, but she was proud of that. She was so proud that she had such an independent daughter at one or one and a half, probably a little too young, right? But the idea at a child, like you say, at 10 years old, you know what? Mommy's making dinner for all of us. And, you know, the water cooler's over there. Could you please get me a glass of water? Yeah, because that's in service of the family system. That's in service of providing for everybody's needs. And I think that transition is much easier if that was accomplished in childhood, but oftentimes it wasn't. So it is a harder transition later on in adulthood.
Absolutely. Okay, everyone, Sassy and Rude, her new attitude. And this is from Dr. Deborah Amanda. Dr. Deborah, anything we haven't shared that you really want people to know?
I really want to emphasize the idea that we have to really pay attention to what we have control over and what we don't. Well, when our children are young, we definitely, as you were saying earlier, we're the disciplinarian, we're the love fest. We provide as much as we can, as much as we can to help in their development. But at some point in time, we have so much less control. And when our children, our adult daughters are adults, then they are in charge of their own lives. And as much as they may want to regress and make you in charge of their lives and then begrudge you for it, it's not so. Somebody said to me, and I love this saying, is you really know that you've grown up when you can do what your mother says anyway. So in other words, when you're outside of that power struggle, it's really about getting over power struggles. It's about creating a fertile ground to plant new seeds so you can have a healing tree together. It's open communication, it's mindfulness, it's conscientiousness, it's empathy, it's kind-heartedness, and it's realism, right? It's what's real, what's on the table here. Let's get it out there and let's have a go at it and get through it.
Yes. There's such a beauty in connection. When the mm-hmm. connection is there and is always there, or for some reason it's severed, and then how you could come back and create that connection. And I really suggest for all the mothers and daughters and all the, you know, children and parents who are out there, which have not connected for a while, or that connection has been severed, to be able to have the opportunity to reconnect and really enjoy each other's company as they grow up and as an adult. I think the concept of approval that you also wrote in your book, that every one of us, not only we want our parents' approval, but other way around, parents also feel a failure or a success when they don't get their child's approval, and they shine as when they do feel that, although I might have not been perfect, and I don't think any of us are, but although I didn't do everything the way it was supposed to, or I've done things where the other person did not get my intention and did it, and, you know, took it another way, that I do have the opportunity to explain myself and heal. And if I did hurt someone, even in unintentionally, to be able to have the remorse and to have the healing and, you know, to know what, how else I can recreate some love and connection with that. So I think it's such an important relationship that we can't just say, oh, you know, whatever, let it be. We can't do that. It almost feels like a hole in our soul until mm-hmm. there is a part of us that we could do that. And unfortunately, if we don't do it while they're alive, we still got to do it somehow in our own soul, even when, if they're gone, for ourselves. So I think that's where like the connection is so important. And if people have their parents alive, it's such an opportunity to get this.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes it's quality time more than quantity time, and the time that you have together really make that meaningful. And sometimes we do a lot of fluff instead of healing, and healing is really where it's at. So, you know, if you want this journey, be patient, take it on, love with limits, be as compassionate and empathetic as possible, and make room for it. Just say, I want this and I'm going to bring it on.
Yes. And seek help if you can't do it on your own. So the book Sassy and Rude is sharing with you how you could do this. But as you go through this book and you see, this is not enough for me, I need to get help. I need someone to sit there while we go through this, you know, facilitating the conversation and the healing. These are amazing times for, you know, both a mother and daughter to be able to get help. Where can people find you?
Well, the best place is just to go to my website at drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com, and all my social media links are there. And the book can be found on any retailer. Amazon.com is one of the primary ones that people go to these days, but it's on other Barnes and Noble, etc. So yeah, take a look. It's got lots of great Sassy and Rude has sugar and spice exercises that both moms and daughters can participate in. And I really hope this book appeals to both moms and daughters, not just the moms, but it is a two-sided healing experience. And I hope the daughters are open to it too. Thanks so much.
It was beautiful to have you on the show.
Thank you. Great show.
And for all of you who are out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.
Are you a psychotherapist looking to enhance your practice? The Awareness Integration Therapy developed by Dr. Fujian Zeng is a comprehensive guide to the principles and techniques of this powerful therapeutic approach. Join the growing community who have elevated their practice and expanded their skills by embracing awareness integration therapy and witnessing its life-changing impact. Order your copy on Amazon now.